On this program, I explore an avenue of consciousness, a shift that we are making at this time in our culture, in the advancement of our civilization. And a lot of that has to do with opening up to new ways of knowing and to a cosmic civilization that we've really always been a part of. And that's what I'm talking about tonight with my guest, Paul Van Ward, if you've never been alone. And a bunch of other interesting insights that Paul has. Welcome, Paul. Welcome back to
Thank you very much, Alan. Delighted to be with you.
I know. It was about, 15 years ago we did a television show in New York?
Yeah, and that was a long time ago. I was living out on the West Coast at that time, and now I'm back in Georgia, north of Atlanta, near my 7-year-old granddaughter, which is why my wife and I ended up here in the Appalachian foothills.
I think, and you're still writing that. The book I interviewed you about, 15 or so years ago, was The Solarian Man. Was that what it was called?
It was called Solarian Legacy. That was a cosmology that encompassed the Hermetic principles and the standard model of physics. In the last 10 or 12 years, that has really evolved in terms of the advances in physics and consciousness studies. And so it's interesting how things unfold.
I mean, you've really kept track of sort of the evolution of, I would say, the subculture that we're a part of, the people that are looking towards the leading edge of science, spirituality, metaphysics, for an integration of all these thoughts into a unified way of understanding the world. That's what it seems like.
Yeah. I've tried to live up to my moniker, which I gave to myself all those years ago. My goal was to be an interdisciplinary cosmologist. And I've tried to stay abreast to the extent that one can with developments in genetics and physics, neuroscience, and consciousness studies, all of the, how do we describe it, all of our inner senses, our various dimensions of consciousness through which we communicate with each other and with other beings. And with people who have passed on, all of the areas that we've got so much evidence now to suggest that consciousness is the fundamental plenum, if you want to use that term from physics, of the universe. This is a conscious, self-evolving, self-actualizing universe, and we're part of that majestic phenomenon.
Right. I totally agree. And I think I'm trying to be like a multidisciplinary observer of the same fields you're involved with, because I think we both feel, and I'm speaking perhaps, is that it ultimately is one thing: science, consciousness, metaphysics. It's about a deeper way of knowing who we are and the world. It's really unified down there.
Yeah, I mean, this is the conclusion that we have to draw at this point in time. You know, we were so much influenced by the creation by humans of the supernatural theologies of Western culture. And that divided our thinking about reality, that, you know, here we are humans on this planet, and science reinforced that, and gods and angels and something of that order was a totally separate part of the universe, and the divine side had to take the initiative to intervene or communicate with us as humans on this planet. And now we know that's a totally fallacious view of reality, because we're all part of the whole thing, with a continual flow of influence and information and contact, and there are just so many areas of evidence to suggest that, you know, we're part of the whole thing, and we are making our contribution just like all other conscious beings in the universe. So it becomes a situation where, you know, we can't separate ourselves. We have to take responsibility for ourselves, but at the same time, we're also impacted by all of the rest. So it's just a wonderful kind of dance that we humans are involved in.
Wait, so let me see if I get what you're saying, because I like what you're saying, because as you're speaking, it stimulates areas of connection for me. So you're saying, because of our Western religious model, the other realms of being and consciousness and spirit, in a way, have been separated from our daily living, and we've developed a sort of a special reverence for something that we're separate from, or that we've been told we're separate from. And you're saying, of course, that we're essentially not separate. It's integrated. It's all about all of us, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to express. And when I look back at history and look at the developments of, you know, theology, our worldviews that are based on assumptions we make about the reality of the universe, and when we look back and at the history of all of these Western religions, they were developed out of a misinterpretation, or I think a deliberate misinterpretation, of the human experience with more advanced beings than humans, who intervened in our development on this planet when we were very primitive beings. And we took the accounts of this experience of a intervention on the earth by extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional beings intervening in our evolutionary trajectory on this planet. And then, you know, all the early humans, all of the ancient texts point to the reality of this intervention by more advanced beings in our own development, and the texts talk about that. But somewhere along the way, about 2,500 years or so ago, the history of that interaction, that intervention, our involvement, our participation in the life of this planet, along with other beings, and they had obviously pulled out of their direct role in our human civilizations, but the priesthoods and the sort of hybrid royal families who were ruling over tribes of humans somewhere between 3,000, 5,000 years ago started to morph that reality into this separate divine realm. And then we started very much to depend on what the priesthood told us about ultimate reality. And we as individuals and as a society separated ourselves then from that history of more advanced beings taking part in our own development. And that led to our what I call self-deprecating, dependent, fearful, subservient, with a sense of obeisance against the gods that we had created ourselves. And that gave us the kind of strife and fragmented culture that we have, of everybody breaking off into parts of their own interpretations of this divine realm, which was our creation, and that is the concept of that was our human creation in the first place.
And it seems like science has replaced the priesthood. So we're being then like caught between a religious fundamentalist dogma that says we're separate from God and a scientific mechanistic paradigm that says there is no God. And so there's the human being who's been stuck in a kind of depressed psychological outlook about what was possible for us. So that is what's changing with books that you've written and many others in this movement, I would say.
Yeah, I think this is not unique to me. I think there is a significant movement of this effort to expand our knowledge of ourselves and our past to encompass the physical beings of other species or subspecies of this humanoid life form that we're part of. We've separated ourselves from all of that, and you're exactly right, because it's the standard model of science is just as fundamental as it is in terms of the religious worldview of a fundamentalist perspective, where there's simply the black and white perspective. We have no nuancing between science and religion for the most part. But as you mentioned, I mean, a lot of people now are trying to fill in that gap, and that comes from people who come from a physics background, for example, who now are expanding their models to include consciousness at many levels of activity in the universe. And you're getting it also then, I think, from the religious fundamentalist supernatural point of view by opening itself up to recognition of this past that got us off track from our own self-development evolutionary trajectory.
Right. So if we I totally agree with you, and I think this is what 2012 is about, if we want to call it that. I know you have a lot to say about that. Maybe we'll get to the 2012, but I do think whatever you want to call it, this time is about the rejoining, the remembering of who we are, and it comes down to me. And I mean, everything you also say in the book, We've Never Been Alone, and you outline the whole history around the planet, throughout the world's religions, of our contact with advanced beings, whether they're extraterrestrial or gods or divine beings. But it comes down to me, I mean, besides all the things you say, states of consciousness, a state of consciousness is that we can witness these other beings when we're in a kind of altered state or a higher state or this is what it seems like. No one really talks about this idea of states of consciousness, whether that's through meditation or other forms of practice. There seems to be an interaction, at least in what I feel in my case. I've met beings, but I wasn't in a beta state, or whatever you call that brainwave. It was an altered state, and I was able then to perceive other realities. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, we have many different levels of experience. I have not myself practiced the shamanic tradition, for example, which is one example of expanding one's consciousness, opening the lenses of consciousness, as perhaps a metaphor for thinking about expanding our ability to access other dimensions and other beings. I have had experiences of that type, but I haven't made it a tradition or a practice, as many people have. We've also, have people who are very easily susceptible to channeled information from other dimensions. And once again, I have dabbled in that area for myself, but I depend on a lot of other people who spend a great deal more time and focus to serve as channels to other dimensions, communicating with other beings. So I guess what I'm doing is I've worked a little bit in all of these areas and have enough friends and colleagues who share their material with me that I see myself as sort of a synthesizer of these areas of consciousness that humans can access. And at the same time, I have done research with so many people who feel that they have had physical, down-to-earth, tangible, empirical contacts with other beings as well. So it's a spectrum there from, a face-to-face physical encounter all the way to a very deep, totally psychically and consciously open to material from other realms. And we're left then with the need to try to corroborate information from all this range of sources. And that's one of the things that I've tried to focus on, is to work with people who have information through these various channels, and then find ways to verify it in our 3D, 4D reality, or at least to have parallel information coming through different individuals and from different sources to see if there's some sort of level of correlation from one source to the other before I make some conclusions or inferences from this information. And I, for example, one area of this is the whole idea of, survival after death or reincarnation. Dealing with that area in this, using this approach, trying to get the data from so many different sources and then see how they mesh over time.
Right. But, I know your research has been great and you've been at it so long, but besides all your reason, there must be a passion in you. There's a feeling. I mean, if you could talk about your personal experiences, because there must be something in you that drives you to make these connections, to be a bridge and a synthesizer. So I know that because I met you and I know who you are and I've heard you speak on Coast to Coast and other places, that there's something in you that's driving you there. And if you want to talk about any of your personal experiences, I would love to hear, what it is that you find in yourself that calls you to this.
it's hard to know where to start. I guess the earliest experience that I had that I think, I was so young that you could hardly say that it had a significant impact on my whole life. But when I was about 4 and 5 years old, I lived in the woods, literally, on a sharecropper's farm in northwest Florida at the end of World War II. And that'll tell you how old I am.
Okay.
But I didn't remember this directly myself when I was growing up in my teens and so on. But my family members kept telling me about my visits out in the woods with these two friends that I would come back into the house with my siblings and parents, and I would tell them about things that these friends told me out in the woods. And their name was Woken Wokum. And, you know, my parents then we'd go to large family gatherings of relatives around the area, and I would become the object of conversation as my parents and siblings would describe the things that I talked about. And then as we do in most instances, these childhood memories get buried, you know, overlaid by new experiences and what we learn in school and all of that. So I think that something, I had some sort of experience that I don't know exactly what it was, but it certainly had an impact on me. And I, from that time on, I've had this sort of questioning, sort of standing outside of oneself point of view. And the next little point in that story is that I was a rural bumpkin, going only to the local fundamentalist church that everyone in that little part of the woods attended. And at age 12, I was frightened to death if I didn't go down and tell the minister that I was going to accept Jesus as my Savior, and I just wanted to be baptized tomorrow because I knew if I died the next day, I would go to hell. And so I had that experience. But the next day, after the baptism in the Coldwater Creek, I went to the service on Sunday morning, and I started challenging the minister about some of the things he was saying, the inconsistencies in his theology and the logic that he was using to browbeat us psychologically to keep us in control and contributing our money and so on to the church. And that started this questioning, trying to look into the sort of deeper level of things. And it was a trajectory that was not a complete turnabout at a moment in time, but it took me several years to grow up in the church, to become an ordained minister, to get involved in the role of being one of the priests, being one of the messengers of God, being the spokesperson for the religion, and so on. But at the same time, there was this gnawing kind of pulling inside that, you know, you're doing things and you're practicing methods of both seducing and browbeating people to accept your theology, and that's not appropriate. So I finally, in my early 20s, moved on out to a broader worldview than fundamentalist Protestant belief systems, and started looking into the cultures of the world and college, getting inner religious perspectives, comparative religious perspectives, and on and on. So it's a long story, but it seems to me that you've hit on the key point there, is that there was something in me from the beginning that set me on this path of being an iconoclast. I mean, I haven't ever found a clast I didn't like to break up.
But no, I think it's important because you come from a culture and you evolve beyond it, but you can also see how many people are still stuck without judging them. I'm trying not to judge people, but, you know, they're stuck in that way of thinking that limits who they are, and what is possible in the world. And, you know, you were fortunate because you were able, you had enough intelligence or whatever mysticism that set you free. But what do we do about, you know, probably most of the people you grew up with that stayed that way and limited their human experience, perhaps? I don't know, I can't say for sure, but how do we reach those people, I guess I'm asking you from? You know, the big shift that's happening and everybody's watching the football game, so...
Yeah, I have, you know, sort of developed a theory, a theoretical framework for that sort of personal experience that I described there. And I really think there is something to the notion of reincarnation, the notion of survival, of consciousness, whether it's in physical form or other forms. And I've come to believe that we are all we consist of a field of information, a field of knowledge, experience, sort of an epigenetic form that, like in quantum physics, where we see the particle come into expression and material form, and then it's out of that, and then it comes back. And I think that we as conscious organisms are analogous to that. We are much more complex, obviously, with our totality of physical matter, energetic forms and fields, and pure consciousness itself, and that somehow we are part of this whole self-evolving, self-learning universe, and that as we accrue or accumulate experience, insight, skills, talents, whatever words we want to apply to ourselves, we continue on this trajectory for who knows how long. Perhaps it started at the very beginning for us as individuals, that we are the product of a template of a particular kind of being, and I use the word humanoid, perhaps is it's more than just humans. It's a whole template of conscious beings that exist in many parts of the universe, and that we're evolving and we're contributing to that process. And at some point, we're likely to merge into larger fields of consciousness, so that the individualism that we have in this experience on planet Earth and in between, that we join forces, as it were, in even more powerful areas of creativity. And I sort of, that's what I carry around inside my head, you know, that I'm in this moment in time, I'm who I am and doing what I'm doing at the moment, but the roots are all in the past and the potential is in the future, and that we're all connected at the same time in this process.
Well, do you see a time where we actually then openly acknowledge these, what you call ABs, advanced beings, extraterrestrial. Well, I mean, that's what I'm hoping, that there's a time where our civilization openly embraces these other forms of consciousness, so it becomes an everyday matter.
Yeah, that's what I spent the last couple of chapters in the book, We've Never Been Alone, sort of talking about that. It seems to me that we need to begin to have sort of public discussions about our experiences, just as you and I are having right now. But we need to expand this into the public arena. We've had this issue of separation of church and state, and we resist the fundamentalist attempts to force a theocracy on the rest of society, and we have the resistance of the secular so-called humanistic atheistic community that is very much set in its own worldview, a very limited one. And we need to somehow find a way to say, okay, we're not trying to impose this on other people. None of us should be trying to impose our worldviews on the political process, on the economic process, on the social process. These things are personal. So let's get our personal experiences, our personal views out in the open and share them. And I think as people begin to share their experiences with these more advanced levels of consciousness, and whenever I do little small group discussions about this, people begin to delve into their own little carpet bag of experiences and memories, and they begin to, share things that are very much like the things I'm trying to share. And it doesn't matter their religion or their academic or scientific discipline and so on. We are finding common ground. And I just think we need to do more of it publicly. Now, obviously, a show like yours and other conferences and areas of communication on the internet and so on, I think this is happening. But it seems to me that we ought to be more brave about it. We need to be more willing to stand up and be counted about our views of this multidimensional universe.
Right, I totally agree. I think the biggest problem people have, and I think it's the problem everyone has when we're shifting worldviews, is that we're presented with the world, like you look around you, you're in a home, you have your furniture, floor, ceiling. I mean, everything's very, very ordinary, regular. You're sitting at your desk. We're talking through Skype. But, everything's so ordinary. And yet, we're coming along. People like us are saying, no. This is not all it. There's so many other multi-dimensions. And yet, where are they? I mean, people look around. They're watching the television. That's sort of the bridge I think we have to join, these two sides, is like the average, everyday, mundane world and this world that people like us, me and you, are calling multidimensional reality, or these advanced beings. Well, where are they? How come they're not in the living room with me? I'm just trying to be very practical about these two sides. What do I say to those people to say, well, you talk about all these, that you've written a whole long book, and there's probably thousands of books about the presence of these beings and other beings, but where are they? How come they're not in my living room?
Right. No, that's the real challenge. And in my efforts to try to grapple with this this conundrum is that I try to bring information, insights from these other dimensions that I can speak to my friends and colleagues about, which is about things which there are connections in the lives of these people. And I just give you an example. I have a couple of wonderful good friends. One is a neuroscientist working in cutting-edge research for behavioral issues and problems based in his neuroscience experiments and work. And his wife is a world-class violinist who has had 50 years of practice and world acclaim. And so the two of them, he comes from this very physical standard model of science, and she comes from this intuitive, mystical past where she knows things about people that they don't even know about themselves, or they are surprised when she has such insight into their lives and why they have behaved a particular way and in our community. So this is a couple that epitomizes the dichotomy that's here. So I try to involve them in discussions where they are beginning to confirm between themselves that this world does exist, that this level of communication and knowledge actually deals with things in their lives and our lives of the community in terms of knowledge about what's going on in people's lives, insights into events that are taking place someplace else on the planet, communications through these dimensions with members of their family and on other continents, that sort of thing. So when we have those kind of discussions where the violinist and her intuition gets validated by my experience and her husband's experience, and I think we're making some progress.
Well, yeah,
He's opening up, and she's getting some grounding, and I'm getting some evidence and insight.
It's easy for the metaphysician or the intuitive to accept the physical neuroscience worldview, but it's not so easy for the scientist to expand beyond that to accept the metaphysical.
No, you're exactly right. We just were together for dinner last Saturday evening, and what you just described happens. But over the last year, there has been movement on the neuroscientist point of view. And so I think that that's an example of the difficulty of changing worldviews. But that the more we talk about them as worldviews, we're making more progress, and that's the way the evolution of consciousness works. You cannot, for any extended period of time, you can fool people, you know, sometime by forcing ideas on them, but if they're going to deal with new ideas and expand their concepts to encompass these different dimensions, they're going to have to learn it for themselves. And I know 10 years ago I was really a an evangelist for new science and new consciousness studies and so on. And now I'm not an evangelist for that. I'm a witness from my own personal experience, and let it fall where it may and let people react to it as they wish. So it's a different approach.
No, I think people will. I think there is an evolution of consciousness, whether people like it or not. It may take a few generations, a couple of hundred years, but there probably will be a point where everyone might feel the way we feel, that these other realms and these other beings and states are possible. But that sort of gets us back to this idea that we've never been alone, and the two kind of polarities that are presented in that discussion are, as the Jacques Vallée's point of view, that these things, these beings, these UFOs are sort of interdimensional. They're sort of consciousness, or they're not. They've always been here, and they've never been really here for us in a way. They've never been part of our reality. They come in and out of our reality, but they're not based in our reality. I mean, that's one side. And then there's the Whitley Strieber, who says, no, we need to accept and believe and know that they're here, and then they will make themselves known. That's sort of a rough overview. That's my analysis. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think you've posed the dichotomy there and the dilemma for talking about it and dealing with it. But I think that we have, whether these areas of new technologies, new concepts in science and so forth, which some people would think they are the gifts of these interdimensional or more advanced beings. I think that we do have considerable evidence that humans have been helped along the way in terms of technology, in terms of scientific insights, and so on.
And what's the evidence, just while you're on that point, what specifically?
Well, I go back to, let's just take Phil Corso's book some years ago, where he alleged that the DARPA agency, the Defense Advanced Research Program agency, having information presented to humans by non-human beings, and that this information was sort of passed on to the private sector through the DARPA mechanism. And this included things like the transistor and other material innovations. The notion that these concepts came from either reverse engineering of advanced technologies that were made available to humans, or are the concepts themselves were passed on to humans, and then these were put into the human R&D program, and the results were, the kind of computers and communication technology that we have now. Now, that's, we don't have the direct chain of evidence that's available publicly, but I think a lot of people feel, including myself, that there was such a chain of passing on of advanced technology.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think, of course, the whole Roswell cover-up is evident that somebody doesn't want us to know what's really going on. And I do think when we fully acknowledge as a culture, as a government, who's been interacting with us, that is going to shift the way we think about the world. It's going to, and Richard Dolan says this in his book AD, After Disclosure, and I agree, it's going to change everything we know about ourselves, change our potential as creative beings. It's going to open up whole new possibilities that we never thought of before to deal with our current economic, social crises that we're in. So there's a lot of...
Yeah, I think that, you know, it has to be a gradual process. I know when I was first engaged in this area of research, back when I was still in government in Washington, D.C., in the State Department and the Foreign Service, I began to be very much interested in these areas of research and history. And I had no, while I was in government, I had no real access to any of these programs that are held so tightly at this point in time. I did have an understanding from the intelligence directives that came to me and the embassy, for example, when I was in the American Embassy in Paris, France, many years ago. I knew from those communications to those of us in the field that there was a program to scoop up any evidence that suggested that these sources existed. And we were given instructions of what to do if we found artifacts and things.
Were you in the Army? What department were you with?
Well, I was in the Navy on active duty for a few years, and then I was appointed to the Foreign Service and served in the diplomatic service overseas in Washington, D.C. for about 15 years. So, you know, I was never deeply involved in any of these sorts of activities. You know, everything is so segmented in government. You have to be very much on a select basis given access to these kinds of information. But I was in the general system able to understand that part of my colleagues, some of my colleagues, were interested in and active in these areas. Go ahead.
No, you were told that if you came across anything extraterrestrial, there were certain procedures that you must do in dealing with this substance?
That's right. We were instructed that if anything that appeared that seemed to be from the skies or technology that seemed to be of an extraordinary type, that we were to tell the governments in the countries that we were working in that happened to be space junk from our own space program, and that they should give it to us immediately without any further questions and so on, and that we were to pack it up in a certain way and identify it and send it to Washington.
Wait, so you were told that because you were told then in purposely to lie to these other governments, or were you told that because that's what they wanted you to believe too, that it was space junk?
Yeah, it was both. I mean, in other words, this was the cover for anything that was strange or out of the ordinary. We would label it ipso facto as something that we were working on in our space program, and it was something that we really couldn't talk to them about it, and it was our property. In other words, we, the United States, had the right to scoop it up and send it back to Washington.
Wow. That's new to me. That's a new one. Yeah, I thought I heard all the inside stories. I'm sure I haven't. But so I wonder how many times that's happened. And so that does confirm that there's a real organized underground branch of the government somehow that's in on these, holding these secrets.
Right? Yeah, I mean, I've been out of government, you know, for over 25 years. So there are many things that have happened since then. And it has gotten much more sophisticated and much more compartmentalized than it was 30 or 40 years ago. So I have no idea how things are going inside at this point, other than the reports that you and I and anyone else can read about in the UFO MUFON literature and conferences discussing these sorts of things.
But when you got that instruction, weren't you immediately suspicious of the whole government cover-up to begin with?
No, I was rather naive in those days. And it was okay. It was only in retrospect that I put the numbers together. At least I had the information. It was a tangible piece of paper and on my desk, a top secret intelligence directive that was there. So that's very much consistent with the MJ-12 stories that many people have, you know, written a lot about. It was consistent with that sort of operation.
Well, we're almost out of time. It's been really fascinating. Getting back to We Were Never Alone, let's talk, how do we integrate these other levels into creating a unified society?
Well, what I'm trying to do with people now is to work with people who are dealing with artifacts, tangible text and materials from what's called the ancient astronaut theory, and trying to work with people in that area with current researchers in the UFO ET community, and then have them in some sort of communication channels with people who are dealing with what I call the extra dimensional levels of consciousness, in terms of channel material, in terms of consciousness studies, remote viewing, telepathy, all of these what I call our subtle senses. Because I think if we all begin to see what we're doing in these different areas as part of the whole, I think we're going to get a much more complete and congruent view of this, both past and present, our normal reality that we're operating in at the moment, and these other dimensions. I just think we have to bring these different areas of researchers together and to put their pieces of the puzzle on the table, and then I think we're going to much more quickly begin to develop an integrated view of this complex reality that we're talking about. And so I'm taking part in conferences and, you know, working with people and books that they're writing and things that I'm writing, so that we're sharing in a way that I haven't, and I think most of us haven't done over the last 15 or 20 years.
Well, I want to get you the book I'm writing now, which is it's an integration of all these ideas of ETs and states of consciousness and how we bridge those through different levels of the mind. And it's a real concrete situation I'm dealing with. So as soon as I finish this manuscript, maybe you can look at it.
I think that's the kind of contribution that you can make, and that other people, if we all try to work together in that general direction, we'll probably move up to another plateau of understanding.
Definitely, and it's very, very exciting. It feels like we are on the cusp of something, doesn't it?
I think so. You know, I a few years ago, I was really getting rather frustrated and disheartened about the fragmentation and the sniping among different groups and so on. And that's still going on. But I think we're beginning to see people recognizing that they don't have the whole story. They don't have the crucial piece. They have just a piece that has to be fit together with a lot of other people's work. And I think that we're going to make some progress in this decade anyway.
Well, definitely. I think, though, I know we didn't get a chance to talk about 2012 and the myths, and there are a lot of myths, but what isn't a myth, I think, well, it's a myth on some level, is that what 2012 does is redirect us as galactic beings. This alignment with the center of the galaxy, our sun and the Earth, reorientates who we are within a bigger framework. So if 2012 isn't anything, it is about being galactic in as a system. Do you know what
right.
I mean? Yeah.
That's actually right. It puts us in the center of the picture, but we recognize that it's a hell of a big picture.
It widens our window. It widens our view. We're no longer just in a solar system with these planets. It opens the landscape, and I think just that will start to rearrange cognitive functions in our brain somehow.
No, I agree with you. I fully agree with that, and I think that we need to rather than fighting against all of the naive, simplistic myths that are out there, we just go with the flow because it is opening all of our perspectives, even if we don't agree with all of the predictions and prophecies and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, people always want to predict doom. It makes them feel good or something. I don't know. It's just ridiculous. But I think it's a very positive, uplifting time and one where the planet's getting smaller and something big somehow in human consciousness is about to happen, a unified field perhaps.
Yeah, I think that we have more of these neural networks at a physical level opening up, and I think the subtle senses, inner ways of knowing are opening up as well. And I'm getting more excited now than any time I have been in the last 10 years, frankly, about this movement of consciousness.
Right, me too. I mean, thank you for sharing your work, and I hope to do it again, do another interview at some point.
Thank you so much, Alan. It's been a pleasure, and I've enjoyed it very, very much.
Thank you. So how can people find you? Just give us your websites.
Yeah, it's just very simple, www.vonward.com. That's V like in Victor, O-N-W-A-R-D.com.
And that's how they find all your latest books, and you're writing some new books, right?
Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. I enjoyed it too, and I enjoy your insights, and I really think we think alike in some ways in this area of, in this area of consciousness and evolution and ETs and where we're going. And so I look forward to talking to you again. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks so much now.
I've been talking to Paul Van Ward, the author of one of the books, We've Never Been Alone, and also many other books. If you want to hear this interview again, it'll be on PBS. I think one of the other books is Paul Van Ward, Dismantling the Pyramid, Our Surrounding Energy, and the Soul Genome, Science and Information. Those sound like great topics for discussion as well. Thanks for listening. This is New Realities. I'm Alan Seinfeld. If you want to reach me, email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and also check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.